evening and welcome to the Gnostic Waves, your weekly fix of all things mystical, philosophical and psychological. My name's Diane Rezam and thank you for joining me this evening. So on tonight's show we have a special guest join us via Skype in Canberra, in the capital of Australia. We have Barry Hardwick joining us today. So hello Barry.
Hello Diana.
Thank you for coming back onto the show. I note that it was by special request, and particularly on the topic tonight, I was requested by one of our listeners.
Thank you for your lovely invitation to talk on this wonderful subject. That is the koans from the Zen Buddhist tradition. A little bit about me. I'm a missionary in Canberra, the ACT, and a very interesting subject, incredibly interesting subject, the koans and the Zen Buddhist tradition. It's an esoteric tradition, and I think that's one of the keys that we should contemplate the koans in, that they are from an esoteric school. So esotericism, there's commonalities in esotericism. It's the function by way of function of the consciousness. Because that's the objective in esotericism, is to awaken consciousness, no matter what the school. So, koans in the Zen Buddhism, Japanese Zen Buddhism tradition, it's documented around the 1200, 1100s, 1200s, in terms of there being a number of koans developed. So, it's had a, over close to 1,000 years of tradition, so it's a fairly well-developed tradition. And I think it's also important to consider that this was a tradition that, and although it is portrayed and it is Zen Buddhism and their way of being or awakening consciousness, it's also important to see it as being another avenue to awaken consciousness, another possibility. So what is a koan? What is a koan? I've got some definitions here, one from Encyclopedia Britannica. Zen Buddhism of Japan, a succinct paradoxical statement or question used as a meditation discipline for novices, particularly in the Rinzai sect. So the koan is a problem to a student with the deliberate and conscious action of trying to circumvent the mind and the personality. The mind and the personality, or the intellect, better said. The intellect of the individual. Because the intellect is, as Master Samuel says, is the rogue. It is the thing that destroys love. It is the thing that is the antithesis to consciousness. So to awaken, further awaken consciousness, it's important to be able to move beyond the mind and the personality. And that's the objective within a Zen koan. Master Samuel says that it's phrases that decontrol the mind. So the objective within a koan is to take the whole process. Samuel says that the mind tries to process, it cannot, so it tires itself, it runs itself out. Actually, there's this stillness that comes as a, because the mind is not able to process it, so it becomes still. And then in that stillness comes the opportunity to have that deeper comprehension. So there's other descriptions that are given of the koan is. I'll just go through one or two of those. The Zen Buddhists designate the term koan as a certain mystical dialogue between master and disciple. So it's very much orientated within their tradition as being a teaching tool of the master to the student. And invariably, as in most religious traditions, there's a degree of cloisteredness. You know, there's a a whole lineage of teaching within, say, a monastery or a school. And so these Zen koans came in that school, in that context. Master Samael says another very important point about the koans is that the koan is for the awakened consciousness. The koan is for the student, or gives the impression that they're for the student that is well-developed and having an awakened consciousness. And he gave a great example of an experience that he had in the internal worlds. He turned up to a monastery and he, in addressing and being, you know, introducing himself, he came and said that I'm here to talk about the commonality, or I'm here to express the commonality between the Christ and the Buddha, or words to that effect. And the abbot of the monastery, or I'm not too sure of his title, nodded his head in agreement. Master Samael went on to talk more about that linkage between the Buddha and Christ. And then the abbot or the monk came and got a piece of string, and he tied Master Samael's left and right thumbs together. And Master Samael said, because he had the consciousness awoken, he knew straight away what he was referring to, and that was that they were, that the Christ and the Buddha were side by side. Represented, Master Samael said, it's represented on the Tree of Life with Chesed and Gerbera, Atman and the divine soul, or the Buddhic body. So they're on the two poles of the Kabbalah, the left and the right side, the two, severity and mercy. So there's an example of a koan in a simple form of what is potentially an esoteric problem, or to deepen the objective within that koan is to deepen the understanding and the comprehension of the student. Comprehension is very important in Gnosis, but we'll come back to that in a little while. So the koan becomes the tool or the leverage that enables this deepening and broadening of knowledge, and also the activation of the consciousness. It's very much in the vein, in some ways, like the grit in the oyster. You need the piece of grit to cause the irritation, to cause the vibration or the discomfort, if you like, to enable the pearl to form around it, to activate the processes within the oyster to create the pearl. And the koan is very much the same in the Zen Buddhist tradition. It's there to act as an deactivating agent for the mind and the personality, but an activating agent for the consciousness. But this is another point that I'll return to because what I'd like to be able to do is to talk about the Zen, but also then in relation to the Zen process and its similarities in Gnosis.
Okay, Barry, we'll just take a short music break. I've chosen a track from the CD called Freedom, Love and the Recuperation of the Human Mind, which was tipped off to me by Lexi, a very Gnostic-like CD in its words and content. The track is called What Is Good Is Good. So we will be back to continue on with Barry on the topic of koans.
We're living in a funny time, without a reason or a rhyme. They say it's only in your mind. If you say what's good is good, a change is coming to this town, and everybody's looking round. I prefer to stand on solid ground, say what's good is good. What's good is good. What's good is good. Deep inside, nobody can deny what's good is good. I don't believe in building dreams out of fashion magazines, so I'm swimming up against the stream. But I know what's good is good. And I don't want to spend my life arguing about what is right, so I made sure I picked a wife believes what's good is good. What's good is good. What's good is good. Deep inside, nobody can deny what's good is good. I guess you gotta pick a side. Don't waste your time asking why. It's either true or it's a lie, and the truth is what's good is good. So stand up tall and plant your feet in perennial philosophy. The truth lives in eternity, and the truth is what's good is good. What's good is good. What's good is good. Deep inside, nobody can deny what's good. And the lie says you shouldn't even try. What's good, but inside, nobody can deny what's good is good.
So you're back on the Gnostic Waves. That was a track from the Freedom, Love and the Recuperation of the Human Mind CD. That track was called What is Good is Good. I'm joined tonight on the show, Barry Hardwick. He's talking to us about koans. And before the music break, he was mentioning that koans are used in the Zen process, but it also has similarities in the Gnostic teachings.
Yeah, I was mentioning one of the important aspects of the koan is that it's a part of a function of a school and develop within a particular school. It doesn't mean that it's particular only to that school, but it's something that's developed in that school. And Master Samael mentioned that as well when he worked that koan out, that he was familiar with the dialectic of the consciousness, which meant that he had awakened consciousness, so that he could determine that. And also he had knowledge of how the Zen koan was used, and so that enabled him to be able to perceive it. And obviously having an awakened consciousness was a very good, very useful thing. So we've discussed a bit about what the koan is. Now we'll look at more what's its purpose. And we did mention, I mentioned in the introductory aspect about the koan, is that it was to awaken consciousness or to further awaken consciousness. So Master Samael uses the koan as an important part or a component of the meditative process. There are 8 steps in being able to separate from the mind in terms of meditation. I won't go into those steps at this point in time, because otherwise it would blow out the talk. But the 5th point within those 8 points is mantralization or koan. And Samael says the objectives of this phrase are to mix the magical forces of mantras or koans in an inner universe. So that is, as we were talking about with the oyster and the bit of grit, that's what the koan does. It rattles around in our inner universe, and by its very function, it activates the consciousness. Now, and it's really interesting because There's some great commonalities in terms of that within the practice within Gnosis, having a direct experience, or Master Samael giving an example of being in a garden and being peaceful, and the truth of a problem will come to one. So there are great commonalities, let's put it that way. Finishing up on this point, Master Samael says, in this psychological work, the intellect should take upon itself a receptive, integral, unitotal, all tranquil and profound state. One achieves the unitotal receptive state, the koans or phrases that decontrol the mind. Now, it's interesting, Master Samael says phrases. And so phrases or mantras can actually deactivate the mind. They also can be thrown into that inner universe. I've gone a little bit over into the Gnosis stuff now, but I just thought I'd add that little point. Yeah. So the key objective or purpose with the koan is to bypass the mind and the personality and activate intuitive knowledge. Now, coming back to Gnosis again, here's another commonality, intuitive knowledge, which is very much a part of what our objectives are in Gnosis, is to activate our intuitive knowledge. I've got some material that I'll read out a bit that's from a Zen practitioner who is operating in California and has done for a long time. I'll read this out. It gives a more incisive view of what Zen, what words I could put to it in terms of what Zen psychology is about. He's a Zen practitioner. The idea is to imprint and unravel the openness of Zen psychology in the mind of the prospective practitioner. In other words, when the problem within the koan is experienced, the freedom of the master's spontaneous open mind is unraveled in this mind. That's a very profound thing to say. My understanding of that is that the consciousness that is associated with the Zen koan comes from that of the master's consciousness. And when we are able to process that same and unravel the koan, that same consciousness of the master comes into our mind, which is very powerful. Very powerful. And there again, I see correlations in terms of Gnosis with the teachings of our master, Master Samael on Vior, and the practices that he gave us and the teachings that he gave us that we practice. Funnily enough, awaken our intuition. I won't go too much further on that at this stage. There's mysteries, but Master Samael was the master of synthesis. And so the synthesis encompassed many, many doctrines. And it's the synthesis of the consciousness, or the didactic of the consciousness, that he referred to in his experience was the reason why he could understand the koan. So koan activates the consciousness, which will provide the synthesis. You know, I don't want to complicate anything too. But that was very good. I'll read some more of this. I love it, what this Zen master said. The modern Zen teacher living in Northern California describes the koans like this. Koans do not support the interior decoration project. They demolish the walls. So it's beautiful because there's another picture that I don't know whether I can paint it very well, but I saw this on Facebook, where enlightenment isn't a process of floating off into the higher realm or just this cultivating. What it is this destructive process of tearing away or things falling away that are not real. Showed a couple that were together embracing and and they were gradually melting into the lava. It was very cool. It gave the picture of this dissolving process, which is exactly what the koan does. It dissolves the mental processes, personality, all those things that are artificial and ephemeral into what is real. And that is the consciousness, that which has been and always will be, that divine nature within us. Beautiful. So these words of demolishing the walls, you know, and there's another aspect that he gives again. I really like it. The imagery sums up the essential function of koans, in which everything is conceptual, fixed, definable, and linear, to the sudden realization of vastness, impermanence, and interconnectedness. And that is the koan. Because one of the descriptions in Japanese is called Satori. Satori, yeah, that's it. And this is this moment of powerful enlightenment, this light that is just tears everything apart within you, and the tearing apart is all that is false and unreal, all the artificial constructs of the mind and the personality that come from the time that we live in. So, you know, and you can imagine in terms of psychologically, that can be, it can destroy you psychologically. If it's too much, we can completely fragment our psychology, and that's why it's a master student, because the master has the knowledge to be able to direct that process and do it sensibly. That's why in some respects, some of the psychological things that happen now in this age that we live in the end of the Kali Yuga, is very damaging to the psychology. Very damaging. And Master Samael spoke of a number of those things, where there isn't this master-student relationship. We are under the tutelage as a student of the master. And I think that's a very important aspect of this koan, is there is some risk in terms of the fragmentation of a person's psychology, but if it's under good tutelage, then that's less likely to happen. I don't want to highlight problems, but, you know, that's a reality of the time we live in. Okay, there was another aspect to this that I really liked too, that he was talking about. Koans aren't just puzzles that your mind figures out suddenly and proclaims, aha, the answer is there, or the answer is three. For you to open enough to allow the space for them to enter into your depths. The inner regions beyond knowing. Koans don't just come in through the front door and sit on the kitchen table. They seep through the structural integrity of the home we have built, our identity, our ego. You don't really know where they will settle or how they might flip a once tightly held belief. They appear in meditation, accompany us to the grocery store, curse at the parking ticket with us, laugh with us and cry with us. They can be as simple as, there is nothing I dislike. And that's a very profound, because I think what that man has done in this last two or three sentences, he's made the koan a part of everyday life.
If I could just stop you there, Barry, and ask you a question. It sounds like in that statement, there is nothing I dislike, it almost sounds like koans can be used similarly to an affirmation.
Oh, right, I'm with you. Yep. Well, yes, it is. It is an affirmation. It is an affirmation, but it's an affirmation of acceptance of the consciousness, what the consciousness perceives. Not there's nothing that I dislike is reflective of what I see within myself, deep within my psychology. It's like the Buddha saying, if somebody, you know, when he was being abused, when he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, And this fellow came up and abused him. And this is told in various ways, but the important aspect is the koan aspect of it, and that is the consciousness, what it's saying to the consciousness. And this fellow was abusing Buddha. Buddha put up with it for some time. He was in meditation and practicing and ignored him. And then, well, he was in meditation. But then he came out of the meditation and he asked the person whether, if somebody gave you a present, and you declined the offer of that present, who would the present belong to? And the fellow who was abusing Buddha said, it would belong to the person who was offering the present. Well, I decline your present. I decline your offer of a present. So this nothing that I dislike is that I don't dislike you, don't dislike what's happening, but I decline the offer, your present. So finding that present was a function of the consciousness, not the intellect or the mind. I suppose that's what I'm trying to say with this nothing that I dislike or like is a reflection of the consciousness active within one. So I'm not rejecting you, I'm not accepting you, I'm not disliking you, I'm not liking you. This has no place within me, so I'm declining your offer. Yeah, I don't know whether that makes it clear or not. So the other aspect of this, the purpose of the koan, this is from a Gnostic perspective. It takes us beyond relativity and duality. It takes us beyond the thesis and the antithesis. It takes us beyond the black and the white. It's beyond the up and the down. It takes us to the place that Master Samael says, the didactic of the consciousness, which is the synthesis. So there's not neither like or dislike, reject or accept, be in the past or in the future. This is a unity, a synthesis of the black and the white. That's one of the objectives of the koan, or an expression of the greater objectives of the koan, is to take us beyond relativity and duality, out of the struggle between the thesis and the antithesis. And in saying that, you're saying the mind and the personality, as they like and dislike. So I've covered it a bit, but I'll do it a little bit more. The next aspect was, how does it work? How does it work? I think coming back to Master Samael, a point that he made is throwing something in, and that example of the grit in the pearl, in the oyster, creating the pearl. You need that piece of grit, or that irritation, if you like, to be able to facilitate this creation of something very beautiful, or the awakening of something very beautiful. So reiterating, the effort to solve a koan is intended to exhaust the analytical intellect and the egotistical will, in the mind to entertain an appropriate response on the intuitive level. Each exercise constitutes both a communication of some aspect of Zen experience and a test of the novice's competence. I'll read this out from Master Samael. This is very cool. It is unquestionable that the mind will never be able to solve a Zen problem. It is obvious that our understanding will never be able to comprehend the deep significance of a koan. By all means, it is easy to foresee when the mind tries to integrally comprehend any koan, it fails and becomes defeated. Then the mind remains in a profound stillness and in silence. Thus, when the mind is still, mind is in silence, the new arrives. In those moments, the essence, the Buddhata, escapes from within the intellect. Then, while in the absence of the eye, it experiences that which does not belong to time, which is the consciousness. In this psychological work, the intellect should take upon itself receptive integral, as I mentioned before, to decontrol the mind. That's from the Revolution of the Dialectic. Now, there's another thing, too, about this, the whole thing that we've been talking about, and this is more, we move now into the Gnostic, Gnostic aspects of what a koan is, and by way of function of the consciousness, because that's the, you know, that's tracking. It's a bit like talking about the three primary forces from which we all emanate, you know, that through the fruits of what we do and through the awakening of consciousness, we realize that we are all encompassed and all creation is a reflection of what the three primary forces are. And it's impossible to have them outside that. And so what we're looking at now is the koan as a product of something of a much higher nature and an expression to facilitate that higher nature. And now we're going to look at gnosis and the commonalities to do the same thing, to awaken consciousness, to awaken that higher nature within us. So from a Gnostic perspective, there are two ways of attaining knowledge. One is to move from the known to the unknown. So in that way, we look at, you know, we've got five different options to make a decision to solve a problem. And we look at each each problem, and we look at what's known about each of them, and out of that we come to a decision as to what we do. So we move from the known to the unknown. And two is to go from the unknown to the known, which is the opposite. Basically, the unknown is represented in what we were just talking about then, is the still mind. We go from this stillness, this sereneness, this place of not knowing, and out of that sereneness and that stillness, then the known comes to us. And second option is the way, as Master Samael puts it so beautifully, is the dialectic of the consciousness. The consciousness comes out of the unknown. The intellect comes from the known and moves to the unknown. So if there are flaws in the system, then it carries through. So from an esoteric point of view, we want to move from the known to the unknown. Number one is mind and personality, and number two is the dialectic of the consciousness, is the synthesis. So the other aspect, a couple of times in the quotes that I came across when I was researching this, it was referring very, and this was written by Zen masters, referred to intuitive knowledge, intuition. And Master Samael, we are taught very strongly, we are a tradition within Gnosis, that is, within this contemporary Gnosis that, from Samael and Vior, is that we progress in the esoteric value in the esoteric initiations and with our development by the values of the heart. And the gift of the heart, intuition, our intuitive knowledge. Master Samael talks constantly about in developing and cultivating our internal intuitive knowledge, which is the same as what the Zen Buddhists were talking about, is in terms of the koan. Is the koan's objective is to stimulate intuitive knowledge. So now Master Samael gives us practices, and he talks about mantras that strike the consciousness, and even in the Zen Buddhism, they've got the mantra "woo," the hurricane, and that is seen to be a koan. That's spoken about in Zen Buddhism as a koan, and that's a mantra. I don't know whether you get the flavour of what I'm talking about here. Is that the mantras can activate consciousness, which is what we're intending to do, or the intention of the koan, is to get beyond the mind and the personality in order to activate the consciousness. Now, with mantras, we're doing the same things. That's what with that particular mantra, but with other mantras that we do in Gnosis, Inri, a whole range of different mantras that can be used in this awakening of consciousness to set up a vibration, to create an irritation, if you like, the piece of grit in our internal constitution, or Master Samuel says, our internal cosmos. So it's very profound when you think of being able to change your internal cosmos through sound. And we come back to universal sound. We come back to the universal sound, and the whole of creation is a vibration and sound. You know, the verb with his God, and God was the verb. The creative force that created the universe is in the verb. The creative energy, the sexual force of creation is in the verb. So it makes total sense that if we have words or verbs that strike, have a resonance, that are of a higher vibration, that they would set up a vibration within us. You know, the piano example, where you've got two pianos beside each other and you strike a chord on one piano and that chord strikes on the next piano. It's saying it's that affinity. So what we're doing with the koan or with mantras is we're setting up a vibratory affinity within ourselves.
Okay, so this might be a good opportunity to take our second music break. This is a track from the same CD, Freedom, Love and the Recuperation of the Human Mind, sung by Ben Lee. It's called The Enemy Within. So we'll be back in a short while.
Looking for thrills, looking for fun. Saying the great work can't be done. Giving advice, but I know his voice. And I still believe I have a choice. I'm starting to climb, I've started before. It's making its arguments once more. It won't ever work, nobody will care. What's more, there's nothing. This is the enemy within. And it's saying it's always been my friend. I know the enemy, and it's still trying to get me to give in to the enemy within. When I resist, it changes its tone and tells me I'll end up all alone. 'Cause look how they kill, look how they turn on anyone who wants to learn. Tries to seduce me into a trap. Tells me I'm special, and is that. That gives me a clue that's tipping me off. It's not the voice of God, it's the enemy within. And it's saying it's always been my friend. But I don't believe a single still trying to get me to give in to the enemy within. He's telling me it's natural, it's all the dawn of time, it always was, but that's a lie, 'cause now I know that it's a virus that is not a vital part. Divine and perfect nature, yes, it's merely an illusion, imitation. It's a fake, it's just a construct made of memories of impotence and failure, and the lie of separation, and the lie that love is dangerous. So I'm praying for the strength and for the valor and the virtue of the being. it's always been my friend, but I don't believe a single thing coming out of the mouth of the enemy, 'cause I know the enemy, and it's still trying to get me to give in to the enemy within. The enemy.
Okay, so you're back on the Gnostic Waves, joined by Barry Hardwick, talking on the topic of Coens. But you were just listening to a track from Ben Lee from the CD Freedom, Love and the Recuperation of the Human Mind. That was a track called The Enemy Within. So, Barry, please continue on with your insights into Coens.
So I just wanted to close on another analogy, I suppose, in terms of the practice of the koan and also the practice within Gnosis to achieve comprehension, the process that starts with self-observation. So us being able to observe our mind and observe what's happening in our interior during meditation. So, and if we do that regularly in meditation, then it starts with our everyday life. So when we start observing and develop a capacity to self-observe, the next step is we start to self-observe and we perceive what the observer is seeing, this ego working, these words coming up or these thoughts coming up that aren't a product of the observer. And therefore, and then we can resist those or not actually give them credibility and accept them, and we create a separation. So this separation is really important, because in using the language of the koan, what we've actually done in not owning that thought or actually following through with that thought is we've actually separated from the mind. We've separated from the thought that comes from the mind, generated in the subconscious. So in doing, having that separation, then we can perceive and we can come to better understand what the ego is about. And the next step after that separation and that self-investigation and self-observation over a period of time is that we develop a comprehension of what is the ego and what isn't the ego, what is the observer and what isn't or is the mind, the thought and where it comes from. And so this process of comprehension, you know, even we talking about the koans, they're of a much deeper nature. But this process of self-observation takes us to that deeper nature. So, and the development of comprehension. And then we have repentance and then elimination of this ego. So it's the same sort of process, but at a different level, but it's underpinning process of meditation, self-observation, and not getting engaged in the nonsense of the mind, calming the mind, because we don't give it fuel, don't aid its dialogue, if you like. We don't add to it. We don't get angry. We don't get, we don't go yay with joy. We just observe. And in doing so, we give strength to the consciousness. And then the consciousness gets more force. And then it is able to perceive with a deeper reality what's happening with the ego. Now, that's a koan in some respects. So the koan's a bit different in that it sets up an energetic force within the consciousness or inside ourselves that causes this agitation and this reappraisal, or this, the Zen practitioner in California talking about it rattles around in everything we do. is very good. Or gets into the structure of the building, starts on the structure of the building. Yeah, but actually, even in our self-observation and in the early stages, we're still rattling, we're changing forces within our body. There are things that are changing in our internal constitution. There's an orientation towards the consciousness and food for the consciousness through our self-observation and external living events in our life that give fuel to this consciousness and this process of internal evolution. So I like to say, just to close, don't believe a word that I say. Don't believe a thing. I'm just a Gnostic instructor that's come up with these words and concepts and constructs. Test them yourself. If you don't meditate, then try and start practicing meditate, or find a Gnostic class close to you somewhere where you can practice meditation. And if you truly practice meditation or have practiced meditation, then you will comprehend the mind and will have had some experience of what the mind does. Certainly in terms of stress at work and things, you can have a mind that won't let you go to sleep. That's a pretty clear example of the mind in overdrive. So what we'll do now is we'll start with a meditation that Master Samael talks about with the koan creating that disturbance or perturbation within our internal constitution. So just sit in a comfortable position, somewhere where you have, but not too sleepy, not such that you go to sleep within 1 or 2 minutes. Close your eyes. Just do this for a few minutes. Firstly, just start observing the breath. You follow the breath in, breathe in through your nose, and breathe out through your nose. We need to develop a capacity for concentration, another way of breathing in through the nose, holding the breath for a few seconds, and then breathing out through the nose is a good way of developing concentration. Another one is to focus on the point of the nose, and when the breath comes in the nose, you feel it coming in the nose, then as it goes out, you feel it going out the nose, and that's your point of concentration. What can happen if you're not used to meditating, and you can do it for 1 or 2 minutes, and then thoughts will start coming in, or you'll, what's this fella going on about, or I've got something to do, this is boring. All of those things, just ignore those and focus, maintain your focus on the tip of your nose or on the breath. Or if you're used to meditating with your eyes open, focus on a candle or a point in front of you, out in front of your pituitary gland, somewhere in front of your forehead, just establish a point there and maintain concentration as long as you can. And what you may find is, or you may not find, is that you start getting thoughts. The other thing is to try and do this deliberately in a space where there's lots of distractions. And that's another, or some distractions that make it difficult, because often the mind will react to those external stimuli. You know, like there's children outside making noise. Oh, I wonder what they're up to. Start thinking about it, or projecting it. What are they doing that for? And you get perturbed. That's something of the mind. So what we have to do is to try and work to not close off to it, but not allow it to break our concentration. Trying to develop a form of concentration that's internal to ourselves. Focusing on the breath or the nose. Probably the breath and the heart are a very good focus, because that's the part of our internal constitution our guiding light or our impetus for a number of our practices to cultivate the values of the heart, cultivate our connection with the values of the heart, the higher values of the heart, compassion, equanimity, those virtues, the seven virtues. And then we start to try and, as the thoughts come in, we see we can recognize jealousy. Might be something else behind them. This is a bit of an abridged version. We'll just keep following the breath, following the concentration. Feel your chest rising, chest falling. But don't allow it to break your concentration. If you can practice 5 minutes of this sort of breathing and focus each day, I'd be very surprised if you do it every day, that within 3 to 4 weeks you won't notice, you are very likely to notice some differences in you, something different happening. Difficult to understand because that's the consciousness, it's difficult to comprehend from the mind's perspective. Meditation, bread of the wise, Master Samantha, bread of the wise. But we need to develop a concentration within that. So not too hard, not too harsh, just like an observer, just watching things, not owning them, not being involved in them, but being an observer. And if we have thoughts and stuff, just let them coming in on the screen and then disappearing on the other side. But they'll come in, try and get us perturbed, or they may get us a bit jangly inside, resist, we keep our concentration, and then they disappear. And once we become more efficient, so I keep telling you, I'm trying to get it, I'm condensing just a bit, cover 1 or 2 points during the time. Once we've done this for a while, then we start to perceive something different in the thoughts that come. It's like we've got some penetration into to what they're about, what they're actually saying to us. They might be from an insecurity. They might be from a, you know, something that happened to us as a child. Oh, yeah, I can see that link right back there to them. This is the same thing. This is from that feeling as a child. Or to what I was taught at school. That's the start of this comprehension. This is bringing light to your internal Jerusalem. To your internal cosmos, Master Samuel. Because we largely ignore our culture. But it's the only thing that really matters. The only thing that really matters is our response to external stimuli. Unless you live in the illusion and the delusion of the mind. Any serious seeker of the spiritual needs to be able to develop a capacity to self-observe. Master Samael says that When somebody starts to self-observe, they're getting somewhere. Until then, they're wasting their time. I did say wasting the time, but he said it wasn't very productive. But I can relate to that too. Bringing this focus and concentration to our internal state, our state of our psychology. And just have a few minutes of quiet, 1 or 2 minutes of quiet, close the practice. Bring that concentration inside ourselves. And again. This practice is ending. It's only a short example. If you want to pursue this more, try and find a local mystic center, because the objective within Gnosis is to awaken consciousness, is to tame the mind, to bring light to the inner darkness. Freedom.
So thank you again, Barry, for coming on the show tonight and sharing your wisdom and the practice on the topic of koans. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Diana. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk. I really enjoyed it, and I hope somebody gets something out of it. It'd be of use. Thank you, everybody who's listened. Peace be with you.
I'm sure our listeners will most certainly get something out of that talk. I know I did. Thank you to Sue and also to John for requesting Barry to come on the show and also the topic of the koans. I hope you got something out of it as well. All right, that brings us to an end of the show. And again, thanks to the listeners, and head to the website gnosticwaves.com if you missed any of that recording and wanted to listen to it again. That's GNOSTICWAVES.com. Until next week, good night.